Hello, my name is Phil Smith and I am the Sales Director for SAS International. Welcome to the first in our series, The Wellbeing Economy. Clearly, the COVID pandemic has caused us all to focus on the value of our workspaces. The central question must be, is the practice of sharing a centralised working environment outdated? Or has the pandemic simply turbocharged a very overdue re-evaluation of the purpose, the design and the function of our workplaces? With so much business capital tied up in bricks and mortar assets, this is a hugely significant debate. Our series focuses on the central topic of health and well-being. Chairing the discussion, we have Ian Davies of IAM Network. Participating are Kay Sargent, Director of Workplace for International Design and Architect of Practice, HOK. Chris Pike, Senior Vice President for Building Performance Consultants, Art Scorer, and Kai Kilman, Head of Europe for Green Business Certification Incorporated. Now over to Ian.
What we're trying to understand is what can the supply chain do to engage with design, with investment and in management of the new way of handling the built environment? How will it, what are the workplace trends? What are the new design philosophy? What do we need to do to engage people back into public spaces and workplaces? And what does that mean to business? What does that mean to the economy? And also, what are the roles of the standards, specifically WELL, but other standards? What is the role of legislation and policymakers, and how can standards lead towards that conversation? We don't want to tackle all of those things in one great big hit. I want to stop talking in a moment and ask you guys to contribute. We've asked you because we think that you are the right people for these right areas. So this is just a free-flowing conversation that we want to kick off. I'm going to start with Chris, because Chris, you're never stuck for words. What are your thoughts on you know, what business is sort of thinking about the value of their real estate, the people inside their real estate, the return to the workplace, all of that kind of stuff? What's on your radar at the moment?
Well, I'll just start with a basic thought is in some senses how far we've come in the, I think it's been 7 or 8 months, or it could have been 7 or 8 years. I'm not really sure, since February or March. It's certainly dog years at a minimum. But, you know, one thing that I think is been true, and I know that Kay has been on the front lines, you know, maybe 7 or 8 months ago, we were having a discussion that health and well-being was what we might call the 3% solution, right? We're talking about 3% more productive, 2%, and do you believe it? You know, all that kind of stuff. And now that looks a little, cute at the moment, because now health and well-being is about essentially a license to operate your asset. It's about the ability to use your asset at all is having these conditions. And so I think we are coming to grips with a situation where maybe once we were trying to persuade people that focusing on health and well-being and the built environment was about making your workforce marginally more productive. That's still true, but it's actually much more important to focus on those things to make use of your real estate at all. And I think as we go from one of those paradigms to another, we are right in the cloud, in the swirl, as we adjust from one to the other. There's lots more to say about that, but I think at the very highest level, we're seeing ourselves go from an amenity play, something nice to have, to something essential, and we don't know how that's all going to play out right this second.
I think the whole real estate industry needs a slap across the face. and this has not been it as much as I would like it to have been. We are the only industry that hasn't been rocked by massive disruption, and our time has come. Our time came before COVID. There were a whole lot of things that we weren't doing well before COVID. And then COVID hit, and everybody kind of started having these knee-jerk reactions. And I think people are focused solely on COVID, but they're not realizing there were things that weren't working before. This is a unique opportunity that we've been given. And there are things on the horizon that are about to smack us in the face. And if we don't wake up and pay attention to this, we are going to constantly be in a situation where we are reeling. And I think COVID is basically putting fuel on the fire. You know, most of the things that I would tell you need to be addressed are not new. They've been around for a long time. We just have been ignoring them. And in my 35-year career, there have only really been two other periods where the world has stopped and said, what does this mean for work? But never to the degree that it is right now. And if we as an industry do not wake up and realize that we have been given a golden opportunity, and if we don't, disruption is right there. If we don't disrupt our own industry, somebody else is going to do it for us. Then this could be a massive loss. So we look at this as a huge opportunity, but I think too many companies right now are being really, really short-sighted, and we're not being good. We're not being good stewards of two things. Number one, go back and look at history. Okay. Remote work is not new. We've been doing it for 30 years. The fact that everybody's so shocked, it's like, what rock have you been under for the last 30 years? And look at the companies that have failed, that tried to do this, and what makes you think you're different, right? And this notion that I think we have to really rethink the workplace in general, that it is an emerging ecosystem of places, and it's already happening. It's just a matter of formally putting in place what is already happening. And I think the other thing we're missing here is people aren't thinking about the consequences. You know, they think that they can do something without thinking about what is the impact of that. So, you know, plastic shields have a massive impact on the environment, you know, or a lot of the things that we're talking about right now have really negative impacts on whether it's social well-being, environmental well-being, and people aren't thinking about that. And they need to be smarter about what they're doing.
With COVID, it made the society realize that to a certain point, we are vulnerable, regardless if you are a president or a prime minister, you know, it doesn't stop there. So that's one thing which then slowly all of a sudden triggers this feeling safe outside, feeling safe going to school, feeling safe going back into a building. So and that's currently not resolved. Nobody feels really safe. And that's something where we as an industry and as the sustainability portion of an industry and the designers need to find a way to tie feeling safe and health and well-being together. And we have tools, but we need to be stronger as a united voice, you know, and that's to a certain extent still something. If we can have an united voice, have an impact and influence the real estate industry, then they will start listening. Before COVID, we saw the green financing and everything slowly getting active, you know, depending on the country. So now all of a sudden, we need to add and rethink the whole workplace. It's not about open, nice space anymore. Is it now about back to an office? How about now this home versus in an office? How does that get balanced? And that is, all of a sudden has even a political, triggers political decisions on the labor market. All of a sudden the discussion, it actually became a discussion about air ventilation. Before that, it was not really something that you would discuss. Hey, how's the air ventilation? You might say, open the window, but only the, let's put it, the geeks like Chris, myself, and all the people that do certification and or engineers, you know the ventilation rate and why it is better to use a different filter after construction, all these things. You know, I think this is the awareness we still need to bring out, you know, and I know in many European countries, fresh air with open the windows is enough. Then from the LEED standard, for instance, and also well, mechanical ventilation can provide a much better air quality. Let's say if you're in downtown London, you probably have a better quality inside the building with a good ventilation system rather than opening the window being outside. You know, so this is this discussion or the awareness on a very simple level we need to start talking, because that's exactly what can help to reduce COVID infection, all these things. I was in a meeting and there was an engineer that says, you know, we all learned that you should drink every day about a liter to two of fresh water, you know, but we do not really think about the health, the fresh air. You know, we breathe an average between 13,000 to 14,000 liters of air. And we don't really think it's a healthy air. Nobody would drink out of a puddle. You know, so that's maybe a little bit more awareness. But if you're a normal occupant that walks in the office, you don't really think about that. You know, so and I think this is part of our rule to communicate this even more.
Kay talks about this conversation that has been very slow to develop for a decade or more, and people will start to realize that change has been due for some time. She makes some really good points that the real estate industry needs, in her word, a slap in the face. It needs disrupting, and for over a decade, sustainability and human well-being has been a conversation that's slightly been secondary to the bottom line, and there's been a whole narrative about why the bottom line would be more positively affected if, you know, the more we pay attention to well-being and sustainability. Chris, what were your thoughts on, there's an immediate, and Kai's just spoken about that, people are suddenly very aware about air management and about standards and air filtration as a response to COVID-19. And Kay is talking about the need for our industry to rethink itself irrespective of COVID-19, and this perhaps is the catalyst, and she's suggesting it's not a big enough catalyst in her opinion. In my experience, in my opinion, the catalyst that most people need to change is affecting the bottom line, and people get led that way, whether they, you know, believe in something or not. There's a whole conversation about motivation and inspiration, which I know Kay talks about. But in terms of motivating financial directors and people who are responsible for the investment in the bottom line of buildings, what do you think needs to be done to translate this immediate, how can we make our buildings COVID secure and that not drop off post-vaccine? And how does that turn into, this isn't about COVID, this COVID is a symptom and there's a much bigger picture here. And where does that sit in the economic return and people's sort of financial aspiration for their portfolio?
Yeah, there's so many things to unpack right there. I think that some of the things that I might kind of dovetail. Let me take your question and go back toward what Kay was saying a second ago, of saying I think that part of that wake up call is realizing that expectations for what constitutes a sufficient, let alone a high quality product, are changing due to perceptions that are set outside of our industry. What I mean by that is saying our codes and standards nominally are attempting to provide 80% occupant satisfaction while ignoring a wide range of factors. And we all know that our buildings deliver a lot less than 80%. If you went on TripAdvisor or a similar website and you looked at a hotel that had less than an 80% satisfaction rating, you might book another hotel if we were doing that. So what I'm saying is that permeates to a lot of other industries. Our expectations for the delivered quality of our product are lower than other industries. And that is not a sustainable situation. We can't have a set of things that are, we say, hey, we're the building industry, so we deliver a low quality product, 80% satisfaction nominally, you should be okay with it. That's not how this works. And at least that's not how it works on the long haul. So the bottom line is, our way of designing, operating buildings has been delivering a substandard product relative to other industries. That creates what I interpret as what Kay was saying is a long-term liability for the industry. We need to do something about that. The second part, Ian, which is what you were saying, is we also recognize that these issues are about ultimately the ability to use an asset or not. It's not even about the issue of whether you're getting marginal rents. It's about, will people come back to your to your facility? Will you get rent at all? And we need to both kind of have a two-sided value proposition. One is defensive. Are you doing things that are creating risks and liabilities? We can certainly talk about that. And the other is, in a world where people are going to simply have more choices in the property that they choose to let, in the things that choose to invest in, you are going to pick ones that are lower risk and higher return because they have these qualities to them. And that, whether that is that you have an advanced air handling system or whether you have daylight, ventilation, views, social connectivity, whatever that is, we're going to go into a buyer's market or a lesser. If you're going to be looking for space in this market, you're going to be in the driver's seat. So one way or the other, I think that these changes are coming, and not just coming, but the other issue is, and I'll just give one I think that when you go up to the institutional investor level, there is a greater appreciation that these things need to be part of the due diligence process. So they go from the periphery into the core, and that it is possible to make a difference. That basically that not all property is the same. You can't. When we started the GRESP health and well-being module about now 4 years ago, there was a real sense that all property was that everyone did a good job managing these things generally, and that it was simply a question of superior amenities. I don't think that's at all where we are right now. I think that we have seen that there are material differences in how property is designed, built, and operated. Those have to do with not just tenant attraction, but the ability to generate any kind of revenue stream in the future. So once we have moved over, and actually one thing that reinforces that, if you look at the materiality assessments for property companies, for real estate investment trusts going back the last 5 years, you know what doesn't make it to the upper right? So a materiality assessment basically is this assessment of what can you do versus what matters to your business. Important stuff goes in the upper right. And you know what's not been in the upper right? Health and well-being. You know what should have been in the upper right? Health or well-being. So that tells me two things. One is property companies were not self-aware about the importance of these issues to their business, and their investors in turn were not informed. So we're going to see a paradigm change, whether it's at the level of SASB, the Sustainable Accounting Standards Board, or whether it's at the level of individual property companies. I don't think people are going to let health and well-being out of the upper right quadrant for some time. So we can talk more about any of these issues, but I think the bottom line is there's a change in what investors should know about. There's a change in what property companies should represent as material, and there's a change in who's in charge, who's driving the conversation further down. And as Kay said, if folks aren't keeping up with those trends, they do it at their own peril.
I want to go back to something that Chris said about poor quality or low quality. Our industry is set up for failure in this regard because if you think about it, the auto industry is kicking our butt. You have a better experience and more tech in your car than we do in our workplaces, okay? But there's a reason for that, okay? You can buy a cheap car or you can buy a more expensive car. They decide the value proposition. When you're an employee going to an office, it's one size fits all. We haven't set up, here's the economy workstations, here's the economy real estate, here's the super, you know, high quality one. And I think what's happening now is if we create an ecosystem of spaces where remote work is a viable option, and maybe being in third places is a viable option, then companies can look at their core real estate or their hub in a different way. And they're going to have to think about what is compelling enough, going back to Chris's point, what is compelling enough about this place that makes you even want to come here in the first place? Because if it's not, I don't want to be there, right? So we really have to think about the purpose of place, and it has to be different enough. And if it's different enough, you know, maybe our home office is the more DIY solution, and the hub is the more luxury solution. You might have fewer work points because they're not all assigned, but the work points that you have are better and smarter and are like something that would actually make me want to commute to get to and to have and to experience, okay? So it's the difference between, you know, being in a Mercedes versus taking the bus. And right now, when you go to the office, everybody's sitting on a bus. That's what we're doing. That's what we're giving everybody because we have to just make it so that it's equal.
This podcast was brought to you by SAS International and IAM Network. For further information, please visit www.sasintgroup.com.